Hey, everybody. This podcast is brought to you by Documentary First Productions, and we need your support so that we can keep preserving history. If you could go over and grab some merch or watch our films at documentaryfirst.com, you'll help us keep making awesome documentaries and sharing the stories that matter, and also bring amazing filmmakers and their wonderful films to the world. So thank you so much for listening, and thank you for visiting documentaryfirst.com. Welcome to Documentary First, an inside look at documentary filmmaking. I'm your host, Christian Taylor, and a documentary filmmaker myself. This week, you are in for a surprise. We're doing something a little bit different this week. We have done this in the past. I sat in as a guest on the Movie Rob Minute. Movie Rob Minute podcast is a podcast where Rob takes a movie and he reviews it minute by minute. And so we did this with Rob a while back on Saving Private Ryan, and we're releasing this same podcast on our channel because we want to make sure all of our listeners hear it. And I sat down with him a while back in a special episode with our veteran, C.O. Bauer. Now, C.O. Bauer is in the film, The Girl Who Wore Freedom. I met him 8 years ago when I began filming this movie. He actually was really the first World War II veteran that I sat down with and got to know. And it was where I was watching a Flow Planet interview C.O. Bauer that I learned so much about how to really listen to a veteran. This podcast that you're about to listen to really demonstrates this whole technique really, really well. Rob is good at asking questions. C.O. is good at sharing. And you will hear he even gets really teary at times at sharing his story. So you're in for a treat listening to C.O. Bauer as he tells a little bit about who he is and his story. We start by asking him if he's ever seen Saving Private Ryan and if it's factual. So it's a very interesting conversation that we had when I went to visit him in Michigan. There are some visitors that kind of pop in. We were staying at an Airbnb and they were very curious and wanted to know kind of what was going on. So we allowed them to come in and it made for some interesting things that happened. So yeah, that's what happens when you're recording live. So anyway, I do think this is a very special episode. We're going to break it up into two parts because CO loves to share and it ended up going a little bit long, but it was worth every single minute. CO is still alive and kicking. He went with us to Normandy once again this year, and he had an amazing time blessing French people. We're continuing to share that on our social media channels. Hopefully you're following us on Documentary First. Anyway, please enjoy our visit with CO Bauer on the Minute Rob podcast. CO, are you okay for us to record this?
Certainly I am.
Rob, are you okay for this to be recorded?
Of course, both audio and video.
Wonderful. All right. Rob, I'm going to let you kick this off, but I am going to say my name is Christian Taylor, and I am here with Rob from the movie Rob Minute and C.O. Bauer, the legendary C.O. Bauer of 95th Infantry Division, 377th Infantry Regiment, I Company.
The Iron Men of Metz.
The Iron Men of Metz. Yeah. Anyway, this is Rob. Rob, C.O.
Yep.
Hello, hello.
Ho, 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 ki, ho.
Oh, my goodness. He doesn't know about ho, 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 ki, ho.
Yeah, well, he doesn't.
No, no, we'll get there. We'll get there. Let's just, you know, let me do my introduction. And then, you know, so that I have, you know, and then we can get into the whole thing. No problem. You know, my time is your time. However much time you want, I have. You know, so we'll be here till tomorrow morning, right? Okay. One thing at the very end, the way that I close out my shows is by using the line from Saving Private Ryan, "Earn this." So I'll say "Earn this," and then you guys would say "Earn this." You know, but that'll be all the way at the end. You know, I'll remind you if you forget. Not a problem. Okay.
All righty.
All right. Hello, everyone, and welcome to minute 166 of season 8 of Movie Rob Minute, the daily podcast where we FUBAR our way through the 1998 Steven Spielberg award-winning film Saving Private Ryan, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me today on a very, very special episode is, and I'm honored to have, C.O. Bauer as my main guest. He is a World War II veteran who fought in Normandy, and we're going to hear all about his stories today. And along with C.O., I also have Christian Johnson Taylor, who, as many of you probably will remember, she was on a few weeks ago. You know, she's an award-winning documentary director, and we're going to talk about her film also. I mean, we touched upon it a few weeks ago, but we will touch, we'll go deeper into it this time, because, you know, it also is a movie that features Sio. So we're going to have a lot of fun today. So I want to welcome you both to this episode.
Thank you. Very nice to be here.
Thank you very much.
I appreciate it. I must say, I don't think I've ever spoken to somebody who's, you know, past the century mark. So, you know, this is really, truly an honor for me to have done that.
It's tough to get here.
It's easy for you to say.
Yeah, right. Well, you got to be careful.
Now, we do need to say that he is 101. We haven't even mentioned that.
Yeah.
And he's very close to 102.
That's right.
All right.
Another 2 months, I'll be there.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yep.
So you literally are twice as old as I am, since I turned 51 back in January.
Yeah, well, you got to be careful.
Although
I'll do my best. We also know
eliminate all hazardous activities.
You mean like fighting in Normandy?
That's right. Yeah.
You did that when you were younger. So, you know, so I remember hearing something recently that someone said that that's the reason why wars are fought by the young young people, you know.
Yeah.
All right. So why don't we start off with a general question? I mean, obviously, Christian, we've already talked about this, but Theo, have you ever watched the movie Saving Private Ryan?
Yes, I have. Yeah.
More than once,
I think. Yeah.
Okay. Great. And you, what are your feelings of a movie like that? Do you think it? I mean, I know that you weren't on the beach itself during that attack, which, you know, I'm sure was harrowing for everyone who was there. But you know, what is your opinion of how they depicted the soldiers, the work, everything that they had to do in Normandy? You know, did it bring back memories, good or bad?
As far as memories are concerned, I have memories, and probably the reason I watch movies like that, because I can associate with them.
Mm-hmm.
Every movie is different, of course.
Yes, of course.
They're based on a story, so the movie has to attract attention from the public, and so it has to be such that the public will get the story.
Yeah, of course.
From that standpoint, you know, it's not that realistic, except that it's pretty much there. So certainly, you know, for a mission like what occurred in Saving Private Ryan there, I imagine, you know, that it wouldn't be that big a deal, you know, to the troops that had it. In other words, that got it, and since it was so from a story purpose, you know, it's enhanced, what I have to say.
Of course. But did the battle scenes remind you of what really happened there? Or
I think the battle scenes were good. You know, they were pretty enhanced. You know, more than would occur normally, because there was, among other things, there was no during, say, I participated in attacks where there was artillery involved, and what wasn't the freedom to be moving like was portrayed in Saving Private Ryan.
Right. Okay.
And I'd be somewhat skeptical in that they did move quite as much, because as I recall from the movie, and I would be skeptical that they held very many theoretical discussions,
right?
like you have in a movie. There's just not time for that, and the people involved, their lives are at risk, and so they're not going to be discussing theory about what happened. So that has to be in there for the movie.
Right. It's true. Yeah. It's very true. 100%. You're right about that.
Yeah.
So why don't you tell us your story?
My story? Well, yeah. My story, of course, is that I landed in Normandy some 100 days after D-Day with the 95th Division, Company I. Basically, mm-hmm. we did not have combat. The fighting was up past Paris at the time. And we camped there, the whole division. And the division is about 14,000-15,000 men for mm-hmm. 3-4 weeks while we waited to, basically the Allies overran their supply. And so, for a period of 4 and 6 weeks there, they were out of gas and out of shells and everything past Paris. So there was no need for us on the front line until they resumed the offensive. And so we camped there and kind of marched around, and I even played football. We played softball. In fact, I played my last football game I could ever play there, because I was wounded, up when we got on the front line and attack up at Metz, France, near the German border. So we did that. And I have been back there to where we camped last year, the 80th anniversary of liberation, and Christian remembers it, right? And, I actually was taken to by the French to where a battle occurred. Which they said was where we came. Our rifle company camped. I'm a bit skeptical of that. I just, looking around, nothing looked familiar, but the battle.
Well, 80 years have passed. The geography does change a little bit.
The hedgerows, I don't think, change that much. There's cattle in the fields. And I was able to do what I call the pump handle dance by a manure pile. I did it. By a manure pile in the hedgerow field, small field, cows in the pasture too. So I did that symbolically, because I'm from a rural county, and I grew up as a farmer until I went in the military at age 19. And so symbolically, I did the pump handle dance, which I did to, jumping up and down the pump handle, because back in the 40s, we didn't have power, and you got your water to drink and your water for your livestock by jumping up and down the pump handle for an hour or two every day.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And so even the Mennonites won't do that anymore here in the USA. So in order to break the monotony, yes. I wound up imagining that I was dancing with the pretty girls at a square dance, and jumped up and down doing what I call a square dance shuffle.
Very nice.
And singing a little ditty. Which I'll sing one verse of it to you, because there was
sure, music. I'd love to hear it.
And this is what my grandpa said they did what my grandfather Bauer said they did in Iowa, where he grew up. They, if there was no violin or no music, they sang these little ditties. But the one I like was pretty good, was Rats in the Sugar Bowl. Or that, this is one a little bit mixed up. Rats in the Sugar Bowl, I think it was really ants for my grandfather. 2 by 2, rats in the sugar bowl. 2 by 2, rats in the sugar bowl. 2 by 2, skip to the loo, my darling. And then another good one is Little Red Wagon Painted Blue. Little Red Wagon Painted Blue. Little Red Wagon Painted Blue. Skip to the loo, my darling. So I did that. That kept you warm in the winter and got water for the cattle.
Did the other guys in your unit also dance around?
Say that again?
Did the other guys in your unit also dance around?
No. Well, I wasn't doing it for them.
No, obviously not. But if you were doing it, then maybe it caught on.
I didn't do it there. I do the pump handle dance. Finally, kind of to entertain people and keep their attention now. But I would demonstrate it to people, and I demonstrate it now every chance I get. You know, so I'm doing it for you. You learned a history lesson.
Right.
And there you go.
You learned a history lesson.
Can you tell Rob, one of the stories I love is when you landed on Omaha Beach in 44 and you walked off the beach and up the cliff. Talk about that, because you have a very special experience during that time.
Yes, I did, Christian. And I seem to be the only one in my 200-man rifle company that noticed it. By the way, I was a ground pounder, a private first class rifleman. That's the most dangerous job in the military.
Yeah, I'm familiar. I was a rifleman.
Especially General George Patton's Third Army.
He said he was a rifleman, too. Did you hear that?
Is that right? No, I didn't.
Yeah.
In America?
Yeah, not
in America or in the Israeli army?
In the Israeli army.
Okay.
Yeah. I retired as sergeant.
Yeah. So you know. I'm kind of glad to know that. Yeah.
Well, I know, but I don't have battle experience.
But to go back to the story, we landed, we came across from Britain on a British ship, and we landed at Omaha Beach, and I wondered for a long time. I told the guys of our rifle company, I can't remember climbing down cargo nets. Well, finally, one of them said, listened to me and said, "Well, we didn't. We were able to land just through the side of the ship. We were able to get on an LCT, probably landing craft, troops or I
transport, landing craft transport, isn't it?"
Yeah, and we landed on what I think were termed the Phoenix, which were those concrete piers towed across from Britain and then sunk after the on Omaha. Anyway, we landed on those. Then our rifle company then walked single file up a path over the shore dune from Omaha to camp 3 or 4 miles. We just walked. So I'm the only one, and I went to a lot of reunions of our rifle company and a lot of 95th Division reunions annually. So I went to them, and nobody remembered this little sign about ground level that had been placed there. basically what it said was, and I've not got a verbatim, but up this path has passed the finest of America's manhood. It's difficult for me to repeat that without tearing up.
Yeah, I can see.
Yeah.
Yes. Thank you for sharing, even though it's difficult.
Because division after division landed there at Omaha and went up that path.
Yeah.
We were 100 days, but they'd been coming up over that path, single file. We passed our Browning automatic rifle down the line to help the Browning automatic, the BAR man, to help them.
Yeah.
We did that because that's heavy, and we riflemen passed it up and down the line. For that reason, that's how I remember, that sign. We've been back exactly there. We carloads of guys from our rifle company, we went back to Normandy, commencing in 1987, and we agreed that we were at the location where we at the path, which is now a blacktop. You can drive down there now.
Okay.
I for symbolism, I did the pump handle dance there too. And I'm looking at my niece Kim across the table here. She saw me do it and took a picture of it. Yeah. So the pump dance. Yeah.
You know,
how many places around the world have you done the pump handle?
Every continent except Antarctica.
Okay. That's amazing.
I've not been to Antarctica. Yeah.
So, wow. Yeah. Well, you still got time. Yeah. You can make arrangements.
I think I'd pass.
Although he is going back to France in about 3 months. We're going to go back for Normandy. So that's going to be one last trip to France, I think.
Yeah, it'll be another one.
It's actually just in a few days from now because, this show is airing, right at the beginning of June.
Okay.
So, right.
Well, yeah, we're going May 28th. Through June.
Okay, 11th. So you're already there because today's June 3rd.
Yep. So we'll be there, and in fact, on June 3rd, today, when people are listening to this, we're going to be in the town of Carentan, visiting school children there, and he will be sharing the same story, and it's going to be a very special day because the children really, really love meeting these veterans. They can't wait to take pictures and get autographs. And for them, it's such an incredible, special thing. So
yeah, they want to touch us.
Yeah.
Okay. Makes sense.
They want to touch us.
How's your French?
We're the French people have.
No, how's your French? Do you speak French?
No. And I know better than to try to speak French in France. Because they know more English than we know French. In fact, we don't sound like Frenchmen if we try.
True.
Yeah. Very true.
Yeah.
Now, you're talking about up the hills past the finest American manhood. You're holding a sign here.
Yeah.
And a lot of these men are some of those finest American manhood. So tell them about this.
Yeah, well, will this picture show?
For me, it's just audio, but on Christian's site.
For you, it's just audio. Yeah, well, yeah. I'm holding the picture of our rifle company. And I'm sitting in the front row because I was on KP, Kitchen Police. Mm-hmm. They were all lined up to do it. And so the cooks and the breakers and the kitchen police, who do the pots and pans and all the dirty work, we're squeezed in the front row.
I always thought that as a kid, I always thought that KP meant cutting potatoes, because whenever you see in a movie or TV show or a cartoon or something like that, when someone's got KP,
that's what I did. Do you do it in the Israeli army too?
Of course.
Well, that's
of course.
No.
Well, everyone's got to eat.
You got to eat. Yeah. Anyway, Christian, I think, wants me to tell you that this rifle company, there's 200 men, kind of hit a buzzsaw several times. And so in this picture, about one out of every three was lost their lives.
Wow.
And we agreed finally we could identify, remember when we got together, we passed the photos around, because there was 30 or so men. We didn't know who they were.
Oh, wow.
We couldn't remember who they were. You know, they were listed, but we just didn't know who they were. But of this, we know who was killed in the company and, the role. And we confirmed that about 60 men lost their lives, and almost all of them were wounded. During the 5 months that our rifle company was in combat, or at least in Europe, we went into combat in the late October and went through until the company went through until the end of the war. But for me, November 8, 1944 was my last day. And that's when we attack, when General Patton's Third Army attacked to liberate the city of Metz, the fortress mm-hmm. city of Metz. And so, which occurred, which took about 2 weeks, liberation. I think the fifth Army Division did the victory parade. Although our 95th Infantry Division was first to enter enter the city of Metz and capture the German headquarters at what was known as the Kaserne. Mm-hmm. By then, I was already wounded and in the hospital, in the Army hospital.
Do you want to retell the story of what happened to you, or is that too difficult to...
It's not difficult. I've told it a lot of times. It's history, so people
deserve... It's history, but it's personal history, so sometimes
Well, as long as you brought up the subject, a lot of veterans will not talk. They vary from veteran to veteran, but I will. I always did. And because I thought people needed to hear it. I more think it's my duty to speak. That's the reason I'm talking to you.
Right, of course. What's your opinion as to why many veterans didn't want to speak about it? There are even stories of veterans who didn't talk to their families about it. And, they only found out after, after either they passed or much later in life. Of the heroics of things that they did while they were, fighting in either Europe or in the Pacific. And, what do you think the reason is that they say that the people of the men of the greatest generation didn't want to tell their tales. They wanted to keep it to themselves.
Well, I'd say there are multiple reasons, depending on the individual. Some of them traumatic. They may not have remembered.
Okay.
So that would be one thing. The other thing that we veterans ran into when we came back to the States. It occurred for me. The other thing we ran into was that the people didn't really want to listen. And that's still true today here in the USA. When we started to talk about it, in a very short time, the thing that I ran into was that they would mention one of their relatives or somebody, and they've been over there for a long time, and they've never been hit, but they don't listen. They wouldn't listen to you. So I think in general, they just after a while, they just shut up and just didn't talk. So that's still true today. In the movie, still true today. In a couple minutes, that's about all you can tell. Their eyes are glazed over, and they're talking, thinking about something else, and do not listen. So if they're not listening, you're not going to talk. Well, if you just realize, well, they're not listening. I might just, well, they want to talk about something else. So,
okay. Understand.
I'll bet you find the same thing yourself.
Of course I do. Yeah.
Yeah. You find the same thing yourself back in Israel, I'm sure.
Yeah, of course. There are some people who talk about things and some people who won't talk about things, for sure. The situation's a little different, but yeah.
Yeah. By the way, I understand you're in America. There's
what? Time out.
Yeah.
Let's take a break till the dog settles.
Yeah.
Come on in. We have some guests that are coming, so stand by.
Okay.
That's okay. Hi.
Well, walk right in, sit right down. Daddy, let your mind roll on. Have you got that?
No.
That's in a movie, or that's probably in a movie, but it's a song. Walk right in, sit right down.
Daddy. Oh, yeah, no, of course, I've heard it. Yeah, I have heard it.
Say that again.
I have heard that song, yes.
Yeah, that's a good one.
So we're in an Airbnb, and these are the owners who came to join us. We wanted them to come listen. So, all right. So you were about to say.
I was talking about good thing you reminded me about why veterans wouldn't talk. So don't talk. Anyway, in my instance, I would talk, but after 40 years, the veterans in the picture that I couldn't show you to, 1968, we decided to hold rifle company reunions in different cities, and annual reunions. And for a veteran, that is therapy. To talk
veterans.
I'm sure you find that out yourself. Realize that.
Yeah, I've actually heard stories about Easy Company. You know, the men from Band of Brothers.
Right.
That they would do that also.
Right. You know. Yeah. By the way, that was a pretty good movie. Pretty realistic. There was some things to pick up in that. By the way. When they walked into the bulge, you know, they didn't, they came in trucks and walked in, they didn't parachute in.
Right.
And, but there was one of the guys that had, I picked it up, and I don't think most people did. One of the guys climbing on a truck, the replacement, 101st man, was kind of acting as though the other guy that had just joined him was a rookie. Well, he jumped in Normandy, you know.
Right.
And you probably realize from your own experience that you know, if you show up at a unit as a replacement, the old boys are going to regard you as a rookie.
That's right, for sure.
Yeah, and you're not even able to tell them. You know, I've been in the Army quite a while, maybe longer than you might be. So, you would have that occur. But anyway, you know, that was a good movie, and then it brought him in there, and strategically was, I think it was pretty accurate, because that was did happen, and you know, for me, one of the things people will ask me, you know, well, did you fight in the Bulge? And you know what I say? No, I was already wounded and in the hospital. So I was lucky. Well, I was lucky.
Based on what I've heard, yes, I would agree with that.
I was lucky. But you do that, you know. So but anyway, I'm kind of losing the thread, but the therapy of getting together with your buddies, then you pass around what happened, and you learn always, every reunion you would learn something more.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, yep. You wound up getting the replacements that came in, and the guys that wound up going through till the end of the war. And by the way, not very many men in that picture got through till the end of the war. A few of them, and some of them were wounded and came back. You know, came back.
Right.
So you learn from them. I feel the same way when I'm thinking a lot of times about what happened to I Company during combat. I wish we had spent more time reminiscing and asking questions of each other, rather than kind of whooping it up. Yeah, which is human nature.
Yeah, for sure. You were going to tell us the story of what happened to you. How you got wounded.
I was in Maizières-les-Metz, which is kind of Maizierres, and that's kind of on the outskirts of the city of Metz, Metz, and so near the German border, about a half hour away, and from the German border, and it's along the Moselle River. Moselle, after the Red Ball Express had halted, and they'd got enough gas and shells up, then General Patton could resume the offensive. So really, I was hit on the. And they had backed up to Metz and used Metz as a city of Metz. It's surrounded by forts, some 30 or so. You know, some of them old, but some of them were, you know, quite modern. They were French forts, and mm-hmm. part of the Maginot Line. And so these forts then were to deter Germany, but then they were turned against us. Those of them that in the line, those of them in the enemy's defense line, which they'd thrown up to defend in France, to keep the army out of Germany.
Mm-hmm.
So. Basically, we went up online. We replaced the 95th Division, who had entered Maizières and had been able to clear the town. And it wasn't very big, 3,000-4,000, maybe, you know, my estimate. Mm-hmm. And so for 10 days to 2 weeks, we patrolled around. And had to do it at night to find out what the situation was, to find out where the minefields were, and find out if we could where their line was, their line. So basically, when I was wounded, we had a 10 to 15 minute artillery barrage on a medieval chateau, which is a strong point, with a minefield strung in front of it, and smooth wire concertina wire strung along the front line. And so, as a medieval chateau, has a history back to mid 1900s, not 1900s, or mid century, or mm-hmm. 500 or more years ago. And so we had this artillery barrage, and then we went. And we were ordered to do it at after dark. And by Patton's headquarters. So it was a strategic thing. And it took me 50 years to find out for sure what the strategy was, because our officers did not want to attack at night, and you really shouldn't do it, especially in a situation like we had there. So our battalion was to attack. We were on the left side of the road down to Metz. It's north of Metz, and there was a slag pile on the other side. There was a slag pile from ore plant. So that was high. That was the Germans' observation point, because it's flat around there. And so we moved out okay. And we moved out okay. And by the way, I have a book here, which I've got it in it. So you probably should get a copy of it somehow. Maybe Christian can send you one or something. first thing I did was fall in a shell hole from earlier fighting.
Oh, wow.
And I was carrying the bazooka. I wasn't the bazooka man, but I wasn't very well trained in it. But when the replacement lieutenant, it was a replacement lieutenant already, who'd been, because we'd lost our my first longtime lieutenant, we'd lost him, and five or six other guys. When he came, he just came and said, somebody ought to take this. Well, nobody would volunteer, but I did, because I thought, Jesus, we're leaving. We better get it out there. We better take it. So that kept me behind a little bit. And so the first guys to run into anything, I think, ran into probably a machine gun crew that were in front of the German main line of resistance. So there was mm-hmm. fighting there, which basically the first scout, which is my buddy Steve Bodner of Carteret, New Jersey, he was in that first encounter, and his leg was literally blown off, by machine gun fire, had to be amputated. And then they moved on to the chateau. We knew the line really was at the chateau and both sides of it, so that we'd already been out there and got them to. Well, I was on the scouting party that got them to open up, so we got to know where the machine guns roughly were. So, but anyway, we we uh, when I got out of the hole, finally, it was slippery. It was deep, 5 or 6 feet deep. And when I finally got out of it, I was all alone. And then I had to move on out and catch up with my squad. And so when I got up, my squad sergeant was cutting the concertina wire, cutting so we could go through it. And so I was the first man through. He just said to me, "See if you can get through here," and I did. And then the two guys that had the ammunition for the bazooka, they came through after me, and they said, "Of course it's dark, and you've already lost men, and in the dark, you know, it's hard to keep contact."
Correct.
And, yeah. So so I just said to them, they said, "What do we do?" I said, "Well, we're supposed to go left around it, around the chateau, and so go left and lay down till some more come through." I don't know whether there's many more through. Now, thinking about it now, whether there's any much of any more through to come through. But anyway, they did that, and just as that, then it'd be what amounts to it was a flare came out. It was a flare that probably might have been pre-programmed to fall on the wire for artillery purposes. So it literally fell right where and blazed up right where Kellogg and Ahern, and almost simultaneously there was an explosion, which wounded me and killed those two guys. I never came over to see them because they made no sound and they just about had to be gone. Yeah. So, and of course I confirmed that when I got eventually later that they both had been killed. So that's basically my story there of being wounded. But,
And where were you wounded?
And I had shrapnel of some probably 30, 40. A lot of it was just small chunks, but, that were superficial. But then I had a wound on my left temple, which had nothing went through. It was
that's good.
Nothing went through into the body cavity, and so and my eardrum was perforated, but from the explosion, so I could hardly hear. I'm about like I can hardly hear today because I've lost my hearing. I have to ask you, repeat that. But so anyway, I put up a call, for help. And the assistant squad leader, a guy named Garrigan, answered me. He was the only one that answered, mainly because most of the men were wounded.
But he
answered, "I can't come over and help because I'm wounded and got to go back." And so he did. That left me alone inside the German lines. Pretty well known I was in a bad situation. And Christian knows that I remember where minute, second by second, what I thought, because I believe I said, I'm Christian. I thank God I didn't think you'd do this to me. Well, talk about a sin, that's your find a fault with your maker.
Right.
And so, and even at that time, I realized that because basically I saved myself by remembering, that God helps them that help themselves.
That's correct.
Yeah. And so I wound up deciding I had a bad wound on my left leg, which I didn't know it at the time, but it caused me a partial drop foot. Mm-hmm. The nerve was cut to lift my foot. And so, but I crawled back to the wire and stopped remembering. It was smooth wire, so you could just squeeze through, you know.
Oh, wow.
Through the wire. But I remember pausing and thinking, well, geez, this is probably booby-trapped, I suppose. Here I go again. And so what the hell? I got to go. And so I crawled through, and then I crawled left to the Chateau Brew Road. It was Chateau Brew. I crawled left to that, and it was a gravel, gravel street. It's a street now, you know, blacktopped out to the. So I crawled out to that, and then realized, oh, I'm not dying from shock. So I guess I could walk. So I got up then, but I immediately fell down because of that.
Because of your foot, right?
Yep. So I fell down, and then I just proceeded that way. I get up and stagger a few steps and fall down till I got back to where we shoved off, which was our outpost at the edge of town, shoved off from after the artillery barrage. So when I got there, there was there'd been shells explode there, and there was it was kind of tough to get into that house, which had a good secure basement under, it was damaged up above, but they had real good basements, concrete basements, which were almost pillboxes. There were concrete floors,
Oh, wow.
They had them. I think maybe it was part of the Maginot Line, way to go, way to do things, have houses with in the line itself that they'd be damaged up above, but you could be in the basements, troops or people. So anyway, I ran into this guy named Tony Barron, who hadn't gone. They were in the reserve platoon he challenged me, and I gave the password back. And then I asked him for help. Well, he wouldn't help me. So I proceeded to tell him what a son of a bitch he was. And I do a lot of good, swear words, because we farmed with horses, on the farm, and I really know how to swear. So. But he explained,
it's important,
and he had the company runner with him, or his platoon runner with him, a guy named Ed Steele. And he explained to me, the attack has failed. I'm going out to find Sergeant Skelton, the first platoon sergeant, and bring him back. In the dark, he was. So you asked me why people wouldn't talk earlier. I didn't see Steele because I never saw Steele again because he was killed. But I did see Tony Darren, and so at a reunion some 45 to 50 years after after the war.
Mm-hmm.
And so Tony didn't seem to remember anything. That's me remembering, but Tony wouldn't even talk about it. I don't remember anything, he said. Well, it evidently was trauma, because what he did was going out through the dark, he stepped on a bouncing Betty, blew part of his foot off, and it killed Steele. It did.
Oh, wow.
That, but Tony didn't want to talk. I don't remember.
Hey, everybody, I'm sorry for jumping in and breaking up this great story, but we have to. We can't just keep going because it's just too much. And we really do want to come back and give it its full due. It needs a whole episode for itself. So we're going to stop it here and we're going to leave you hanging and hope that you will come back and see if CO will forgive Tony or if he still thinks he was a son of a bitch for not helping him straight away with this injury. You know, CO has an uncanny memory for its experiences in Normandy and in World War II. And really, he has so much to teach us as we listen to him. So I do hope you'll come back, listen to part two, and truly get to know this amazing World War II hero. Thank you so much for taking time to listen to Documentary First, where we believe everybody has a story to tell, and you can be the one to tell it. Make sure you come back for part two. Bye, everybody.